Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to
Ray and Kay today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Kay today.
Sports radio on the dial. Check us out. We'll make you smile.
Ray,
and they spit it, don't play. And we're talking nothing but the NFL and NBA, MLB, college football.
Hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Give us a call. It's Friday. Let's talk some sports. 718-664-9098. Let's get involved in the conversation. We are talking everything. We got NASCAR, NBA, MLB postseason, college football, NFL, Ray. It's loaded. So hit us up. Shoot us your emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website at rayandtaytoday.com. Shoot us some tweets and Facebook stuff
posts. Tweet
at rayandtaytoday. You know, the Twitter. You know, we got some people talking to us, man. I got your boy for the Lakers, Devin George, hitting me up. So, you know, people are talking to Ray and Tay on Twitter. We'll have to get back to talking to our guy, Dick Vitale, as college hoops get ready to start. We got Minnesota-Louisville tonight, Ray. But I got to ask you, before we get to some of the major stuff that's been going on, there's the thing called the NFL. And last night was the start of Week 11. We are officially in the second half of the season. Playoff pushes. Next week is the last week of the byes. It's the end almost of the fantasy football. For all you fantasy heads out there, you got to win this week. Playoff pushes. What did you think about the Dolphins' win? I don't remember who I picked now. I think I might have gone Miami. I think you thought Buffalo was going to win. I know you got their defense. Their defense is great. But were you impressed with Tannehill and Jarvis Landry and the 10 amazing young wide receivers as rookies are really impressive, right?
You know, both of these teams were in a position where the winner of this game would look pretty good for a wild card. I mean, nobody's going to catch the Patriots. So I was impressed. You know what? I was impressed with both teams until halftime, and then Miami just kind of pulled away. I thought Buffalo's D played great in the first half, and I thought Buffalo was going to run away with it. But you know what? Kyle Orton, you know, there's a reason he's not a starter in the NFL. And granted, the Miami pass rush was coming hot and heavy, but they seem to get cold feet in the pocket. And what they go, they went like 0-for-8 in third down conversions. You can't convert a third down. You can't keep Miami off the field. And Buffalo's D played great, and they still gave him 22 points because they were on the field the whole second half.
You know what, though? He could drive you 80 yards, but he can't get you in the red zone. He can't get you a touchdown. Field goals won't win it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Miami. Miami got 5 field goals and a touchdown, too. And the safety, it was just, I don't know. If I'm a Buffalo fan, I'm very disappointed because that's a winnable game. You got to win that game. And if you're a Miami fan, you're thinking, all right, both teams have tough schedules coming up. But Miami's got to think, hey, if the AFC North keeps beating up on each other and San Diego can lose a little bit in the AFC West, then why not? We're in the mix. We're in the mix for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I would say that, honestly, though. If, you know, gun to the head, neither team makes the playoffs to me. I just don't see it for either team, to be honest with you. And that's okay.
Well, look,
I think they'll be competitive.
The loser now is in a much worse position, right? But Miami, they got a shot.
Yeah, they got a shot. I guess a shot. Well, talking about shots, who's got a shot to win the Sprint Cup Championship? We have the final race, Hempstead. 4 drivers are in it. You got Ryan Newman, the long shot. Joey Logano, Ray's sleeper pick. I can't remember Tay's. I either said Harvick or the other guy, Kozlowski. I can't remember. Either way, you got Harvick in there, Danny Hamill. And away we go with his crew chief, maybe leaving, and you know, with the whole things and I guess changing over at Gibbs Racing, who is your pick to win or come in first place out of these four guys? You know, it's kind of weird with all these drivers and four guys racing, and whoever's the head of those four wins the championship, which I think is still a little awkward, but I'll accept it. I guess it's, you know.
They're working.
Who's your
out.
Pick? Yeah, I will work it out. Are you going with Joey? You sticking with Joey?
You know I'm going with my man Joey Logano.
You got to go with Joey. I'm gonna go with Harvick.
Kevin Harvick. Okay.
I gotta go with Kevin Harvick. I think he's focused. I think he, you know, the pressure of having to, you know, win last week to qualify, and he got it in. I don't know. I really think that. I just hope that there's no crazy, like, you know, overly aggressive driving so that someone crashes because of the desperation, right, to win. So I hope everybody's safe, but I do want to see some really good racing.
Yeah, well, look, it's 3 p.m. at Homestead on Sunday, so check it out. I think it's on ESPN. You know I'm going for my man Joey Logano. So I predicted him as my sleeper. If Jeff Gordon can't win it, then I want Joey Logano to win it. So we'll see. So Monday, we'll talk about it. We'll talk some NASCAR.
Yeah, no, definitely. Should be fun. And then, man, we'll go through the awards, see what you thought. I mean, starting with the managers and baseball in the postseason, or we could just start with what happened yesterday. The MVP, youngest ever in the AL, unanimous, Mike Trout, 23 years old. We knew he would get it. The NL, they did the right thing. The pitcher got it. Clayton Kershaw, beats out Stanton and our boy Andrew McCutchen, which, I don't know. Both those guys got hurt towards the end, so that was kind of difficult. Clayton was hurt in the beginning, and two teams of those three guys made the playoffs. What'd you think? I mean, obviously we tip our hat to Clayton to get the Cy Young and the MVP. That's a special.
So that's only been done. That's only been done 11 times in NFL in Major League Baseball history. The last time was Justin Verlander in the American League a few years ago, and the last time in the National League, I think, was '68 with Bob Gibson. But you know what?
Was it Pedro and Roger? The most recent two before that were Pedro and Roger Clemens, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Martinez did it, and Roger, yeah. It's amazing.
So, it's amazing, and I'm not one of these old-school guys that says that an everyday player has to be MVP. This guy was the most dominant player in his, in the National League. So Giancarlo Stanton, had he, not gotten injured, and maybe if he led the Marlins to the playoffs, maybe – McCutchen had a good year last year, statistically had an even better this year for most of the year. But you know what? They weren't dominant. They weren't dominant like Clayton Kershaw. So he absolutely deserved it. And in the American League, what more can you say? Quiet is kept. This guy has had maybe the best three-year run since, Babe Ruth. Because if you think about it, he came in second in the MVP voting to a triple crown winner in Miguel Cabrera 2 years ago, and then just a ridiculous offensive year in Miguel Cabrera last year, and then he wins the MVP unanimously now. So in 3 years, the guy could have been MVP all 3 years. He could have done, Barry Bonds style. But
amazing.
Mike Trout is just amazing, and he'll be a top five, unless he's hurt. He'll be a top five MVP finalist for the next 10-12 years.
Yeah, for the next, God knows. And so let me ask you this, as we're still sticking with baseball, your boy Stanton is talking to the Marlins and sort of requesting 13 years, $325 million. Oh, my goodness.
Ridiculous,
like a country.
Just absurd. This is a stadium that they can't even fill. This is a team that hasn't really even adopted baseball. This is a league that really is all about pitching and defense. Think about who won the World Series, the Giants. Think about who was runner-up, the Kansas City Royals. So home run hitting isn't what it used to be. So
they really won't do anything without him, though, right? Be honest. They're not going to sell out that stadium if they don't have him. He's the biggest draw.
But you know what? Unless you're the Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox, and you can afford to dump so much into one player, because you got to figure he'll give you 5 or 6 good years. And what are good years? You know, hitting.
But he's young.
Tonight.
You know what I do? I'd see if I can get him down to an 8-year deal. I think 10 and 13 year deals are absurd. But if I could give him an 8-year deal for 25 or 28 million a pop, I'd sign him.
Unless you have the ability to go in the 150 range, 180 range with your salary cap, I can't put 30% of my cap in one player. And this is a league that's all about, to me, it's all about pitching. It's about position players. Think about how the Kansas City Royals did it. They did it with speed, with defense, and with a shutdown 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th inning closers. I just don't see the value in Giancarlo Stanton, giving him that money. I wouldn't do it if I was a GM. I wouldn't do it.
Well,
I have to come down in years and in salary per year.
That's fair. So what did you think about both of the coaches of the year? It was down in the Beltway. Our boy Matt Williams for the Nationals, great job in his first year. And then obviously the old veteran, our boy with the Baltimore Orioles. Why am I blanking
Bucky
on it?
Bucky Buck Showalter.
I mean, I thought that was great, and they both deserved it. And shame, you know, it's sad that neither one of them got to get to the series and win it. But I got a feeling with those teams and their coaching, both of those rosters, they'll be back next season.
Yeah,
I'm happy
I hope
for them.
So. Both well deserved. I mean, you could have maybe thrown a Ned Yost in there. Just because nobody really expected Kansas City to, once they took the lead over Detroit, I kept saying Detroit's going to come back, just like Milwaukee, right? I thought they'd get, you know how the St. Louis Cardinals are always breathing down your neck, and even Pittsburgh, and I predicted Milwaukee fading. I also thought that even though I wanted Kansas City, I thought they'd fade. They didn't.
The Cardinals manager needs to get some love too.
Mike Matheny, yeah, he's pretty awesome. I mean, he inherited a team, and everybody's talking about Tony La Russa and what happens when Tony La Russa retires. You know what happens? Nothing happens, because the St. Louis Cardinals are the juggernauts, along with the San Francisco Giants and Brian Sabian.
He's been a good manager, though. He really has.
Yeah, fantastic.
And then we already said about Abreu with the Rookie of the Year in the AL, and then the NL. Was that a surprise to you?
No, you know, I can't say that any of these awards were that surprising, right? Were you blown away by anybody in terms of the awards?
Cy Young, we got to mention that in the AL. I mean, you know, I thought it might be King Felix, but give it to the young kid from the Indians, Kluber. He got it, and obviously what he led in, I think, in wins and was first or second in ERA, so... But I didn't think he would win it, and he only won by, what, 10 points?
Yeah, it was close.
So that was actually close, and I thought King Felix would have got it. But people said maybe that second to last start in Toronto, when he got sort of banged up and gave up 4 earned runs and they lost 8 to whatever, maybe that was the difference maker. But I also thought, like, the last game of the season, he got them the W, even though the other whatchamacallit team won. Was it the Royals or whoever won, so they didn't get in. But King Felix did his job for the Mariners, his last start, and got the W. So,
yeah.
You know, it comes down to it. It's nitpicking. Neither team made the playoffs, so, you know. But, again, another great picture. King Felix is sort of like Kershaw and Trout, like these young stars that give him credit. Every year they just dominate without fail.
Yeah,
I love
he pitches a lot of innings. He's there every fifth day.
Yeah,
and,
you
got to
watch out for the Mariners next season.
I was about to say, for years he didn't have any offense, so you know he wasn't going to win games. He was going to, you know, win 13, 14 games, but he put up, you know, a 2.7, 2.8 ERA, which in the American League is unbelievable. Now they're scoring some runs, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you'll start seeing King Felix win 18, 19, 20, 21 games, Clayton Kershaw style. And dominate the American League.
One more back, though, Ray. the Mariners this offseason, get one more bat. Maybe get one of those guys off the Phillies. You got to believe the Phillies are going to move some of these guys. You know, take a Howard. You know, take Jimmy Rollins. Get one of those bats in Seattle.
How much do they have left, though? How much do they have left, those three guys?
Enough to contribute to a team. I really think enough to be in a pennant race. I'm not, you know, they're not going to be around for another 5 to 8 years, but I think those guys got 2-3 years left in them where they can definitely, all of them can contribute offensively, especially. So we'll see. Enough of the baseball. Talking about drama and conversation and debates, the whole world's been talking about it all week, and there was more to talk about after last night in the NBA. Your boy Derrick Rose, the Chicago Bulls win. He gets hurt in the fourth quarter. It's a hamstring. We'll see if he plays Saturday. I don't know if he practiced today. It doesn't look like it's a major injury. But Derrick Rose, I guess it was it Monday or Tuesday, sort of in a gym, in a court, after or before practice, sort of makes this comment, Ray. And I like what Chris Webber said. I needed more context. You know, what were they talking about prior, whatever, whatever. But he says that he's sort of saving himself, not for the playoffs, not for whatever, but he's saving himself for minutes with his ankles so that he can go to meetings when he's done with his career and his son's graduation, so he's not in pain, limping and walking. Newsflash, Derrick Rose, you're a professional athlete. Every athlete limps and hurts. And guess what? Most men and women in their 40s and 50s who've been working hard for 20 years at any job are pretty much in pain and sore and limping. Hello, wake up.
And you get well, and you get well compensated for that, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you're, you know, a delivery guy making minimum wage. You're making maximum wage, and it came. And he defended his comments, right? He got a chance to back down from his comments, but he stood his ground. And maybe there's some nuance there that he needs to explain, or people don't understand about Derrick. But he kind of wears his emotions on his sleeve. But it's not a good look. Where Chicago is a you know, I don't want to call it a blue collar town, but it's a Midwest town, and yes, they value a good hard day's pay for a good hard day's work. And you don't want to hear, especially in basketball. Like, I can understand in football, if you're thinking, oh, I have a concussion, it's you know, my brain, you know, that kind of thing. But the last two years, he hasn't been available.
Did you hear Barkley and them last night?
Yeah, Barkley.
Shaq and Smith, they were like, yo, we're all limping around, homie. It's like, get in line, please. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think it's insulting. I will say this. I think some people in the media and some fans might have taken it too far in a sense. Like, he never said he's not going to give you 110%. And so I think it's wrong to knock him in that aspect, because when Derrick Rose is on the court, he plays ball. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's holding out or whatever. And there's a lot of guys. Look, your boy Dwayne Wade. You see why LeBron left. Dwayne Wade missed his first game of the season. So you got to watch that. Popovich is preserving minutes all the time with his big three. So I don't think it's wrong for Derrick Rose, with nagging injuries and he's still trying to get to like 100%. If he's got ankles, look, you know, the way he plays point guard, if your ankles are jacked up, you got to rest. You can't go out there.
So you're right. I just don't think you say that. You don't say that.
You'll lose
the locker room. You'll lose the town. The other thing is Tom Thibodeau is probably a hard guy to play for. He probably runs you pretty hard in practice and certainly in the game. It's a grind.
You know, that's why Nessel wasn't signing in Chicago, yo.
He didn't want to play D for 42 minutes.
Like, brother, please. I'll take that New York money and tell D Fish. I'll practice in a minute. Oh, man.
You're probably
right. Speaking of which, you know, and kudos to the Bulls. They win a good game against the Raptors. I think these teams might meet again in the Eastern Conference playoffs at some point. The Raptors are really good. We already, you know, spoke highly of DeRozan and Lowry, and I like that team and where they're headed. but I thought that was a good win for the Bulls. Our Knicks losing to the Magic, and I wonder about Derek Fisher in his first year, sort of like Jason Kidd in his first year. I wonder if it's going to take 20 or 30 games, not just putting in a new system, but getting sort of the trust of the players, that they believe in him, especially with Phil being sort of upstairs, and that they, you know, totally trust him. They'll listen to his play calls. Because I wonder the other night, you know, were they really supposed to go through J.R. Smith, or, I mean, for that last shot, a fadeaway three, or was J.R. probably supposed to either, if he was going to get it, kick it to Anthony. Anthony was open. He's calling for the ball. J.R. decides not to give it to him, and he shoots up a brick. You know, Anthony's the clutch shooter. I got to say, you know, if he's open, give Anthony the rock. I want to lose with Carmelo shooting. I don't know what you feel about that as a Knicks fan.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I want the ball in Carmelo's hands. Now, Carmelo's going to be double and triple teamed, so people have to be willing, ready, willing, and able to make open shots. But the offense has got to flow through Carmelo, especially at the end of the game. And it's not like J.R. Smith had if J.R. Smith has a 10-footer on the baseline, I get it.
Oh, by all means.
J.R. Smith is pulling up from 30 and missing from 30. So, yeah, I was a little disappointed. But back to your Derek Fisher, the jury's still out on the Knicks because, look, we all know that they won't come out and say it, but this is a long-term, 3 to 5 year plan. Derek Fisher is trying to figure out how to coach himself. He's trying to teach the triangle. Hopefully, big free agent class coming in 15 and 16 for the Knicks. And you take away Jose Calderon, who shoots 45% from three, and even Andrea Bargnani, who gives you a stretch four, even though his shooting's been awful since he's been in New York. But those are two key elements on offense that are missing. Now, defense is a whole other story. We've got to talk about that on another broadcast. But the jury's still out on the Knicks. I'm less encouraged about the Knicks making, you know, the playoffs right now. But I think they'll put it together. Just like they lost, you know, what is it, 6 in a row now? I think they will end up winning 5-6 in a row, you know, soon. So the Knicks will be an up-and-down team.
Wait. You say soon. How soon are they going to win 6 in a row, Ray?
I got to look at the schedule. Maybe in December. But I think the Knicks are a 500. What they win last year, 36, 37 games. So I'm hoping they can at least match that. I was hoping for 40. But maybe 38. I don't know.
I'll say this, right? I mean, you have the Knicks and Nets in the playoffs. And by the way, we got to give props. Darren Williams is playing some ball. Nets fans should be quite happy.
He didn't forget how to play basketball.
Yeah, but he's finally healthy, and it makes a difference. You know, in any sport, look, your body's got to be right. If you're not healthy, you can go out there, but that doesn't mean you're 100% and you can do what you do. So
what did Trent Dilfer say? He said the best ability is availability. So first thing you have to do is be available and healthy.
But I'll say this. So, you know, I kind of still believe, or at least hope, that the Knicks can make the playoffs. But I do wonder if – not that D. Fish is ready. I think Derek Fisher is probably ready to be a head coach. I just think, sort of like Kidd last year, it's going to take time for the guys to truly trust him. And I do think it's hard when you – like you said, you don't have all your guns on offense and Bargnani and Calderon, especially your point guard, right? Because the point guard sort of – you know, is a direct link to the coach, and that's what Fisher was, a point guard. So you need Calderon, and it's no knock on Shane Larkin. He's doing a pretty good job, and he's getting better every night, and I like him. And then Pablo gets hurt. But you need Calderon out there to really sort of drive what the coach is desiring on that court. So I think the Knicks right now, it's hard to judge them. You know what I mean? I definitely think it's hard to judge. But what do you think about the Grizzlies, the team – you know, that I think so highly of, and last night against my favorite young dogs, the Sacramento Kings, who are playing great this season, Ray, the Grizzlies were down like 19, 20 points and came storming back to get a very impressive win. I think it was 111, 110 or something crazy like that. are you liking this team? And do you think, I don't know, your boy Bill Simmons from Grantland had a great idea for a trade, Tony Allen for Jamal Crawford. Would you do that? What do you think about that for both teams where, you know, the Memphis could use a little bit more offense and the Clippers could probably use a little bit more defense?
So you know how I feel about Jamal Crawford. I don't think that you win games with Jamal Crawford. I mean, let's put it this way. You win games. I don't know that you win championships with Jamal Crawford. Tony Allen, on the other hand, I love Tony Allen on a contender. Yeah. And I think this team is a serious contender. Memphis is, just because they're a tough out. So even if they're a 7 seed or an 8 seed, they can
get the one seed,
just like they did San Antonio 3 years ago. They bumped them out.
Well, OKC last year. They went 7 games at OKC last year. It was a classic.
So to me, they're just a nightmare because they're one of those few teams that can go big and physical in the front court and can still pass in the front court. Mike Conley, we may have seen him max out, but he's
playing good.
Yep. He's both a very
way,
solid
yeah.
point guard. He's not Tony Parker. He's not Russell Westbrook, but he's
they
a
need
very,
one more
very
scorer
solid.
Though, Ray. They really
they
do.
They do. They do. They need, you know, maybe Tayshaun Prince of you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah,
or
he's
need
too old. He's a
somebody.
Good defense.
Yeah, they're missing. And we always thought that guy was Rudy Gay. We still not really understanding why that team didn't keep Rudy Gay.
I actually think if they would have been patient, that him maturing with FIBA World Cup and being with that team, and if you had Rudy instead of Tayshaun, I think that they would be, you know, sky would be the limit. But, you know, maybe he just needed to get out of there for him to really mature. Who knows? Sometimes those things work out. So, I mean, before we leave the NBA, I'll say this. You know, we'll see LeBron and the train going to Boston tonight. We'll see how Cleveland, they won two in a row, looks. Utah Jazz, they're coming to the Garden tonight. Don't sleep. I hate to say it because I want the Knicks to be a good home court team, but I think the Jazz might beat the Knicks tonight. And I don't want it to happen, but I'm just saying. And you know, the Rockets are probably going to destroy the Sixers. So the NBA is definitely been interesting. There have been some great. I mean, nothing more exciting than your boy Anthony Davis and what he's doing. And they're at home tonight against Minnesota. You know, you called it and you said it. I mean, right now he probably really is the all around the third best player in the league. He's amazing, Ray.
Yes, he's really unbelievable, and the sky's the limit with this guy, right? Athletically, he's about as athletic as we've seen in he's much more athletic than Tim Duncan, and Tim is Timmy is the gold standard. And if he can get his offensive game a little bit more refined, this guy, you know, he could be the next Tim Duncan. He's that good.
Yeah, he's got like that mixture of like Camby, Duncan, and Garnett all in one with a better handle than all of them. One funny note I wanted to throw out at you. how about the Milwaukee Bucks, baby? They're going for 3 in a row tonight. They won 2 in a row, and they're playing Orlando Magic in Orlando. So shout out to Jabari Parker and your boy OJ Mayo and Brandon Knight have been playing well. The Milwaukee Bucks, you gotta like that. Our boy Henson, Larry Sanders, you ready for Buck Mania?
You know, I love these small market teams, and if they can turn it around, I would be so happy to see the Bucks be successful. Why not?
No, definitely.
It's been so long.
And then you got tonight out here though too, the Charlotte Hornets against the Phoenix Suns. Should be a fun matchup. I got to tell you, when the best backcourt in the NBA off the bench, by far, Gerald Green and Isaiah Thomas. Gerald Green and Isaiah Thomas are amazing, Ray, coming off the bench. I mean, these guys are easily, you know, the last two games, both scoring almost 20 a night. It's amazing. Now, obviously, you got to keep everybody happy. You don't want Eric Bledsoe to start sulking, and you got to keep Goran Dragic going, you know. Sorry about that. We got to test the alarm system in the crib. You know what I'm saying? Just make sure everybody's safe with AD. Shout out to ADT. You know, ADT is in the building. But but I'm excited to see what the Phoenix Suns do tonight, and hopefully they keep it going. And you know what I want to ask you? We'll do this maybe Monday. We got hopefully Zendon Hamilton joining us, and we'll talk some NBA with Zendon, who. You know, great St. John's player and a former NBA player. But, you know, I was thinking about the Plumlee brothers and the Lopez. We might have to talk about who are the best brothers in the NBA, because you got the Morris twins. I mean, you got a lot of brothers in the NBA and brothers in football. You know, we might have to do a segment on brothers in sports, man, because it's fascinating, you know. I mean, for any family to have multiple athletes in the league, the Zellers. You got a lot, right?
Yeah, so who are the best? I mean, is it the Morris brothers?
Right now, I don't know. The Morris are pretty good. Probably the Gasols and then the Lopez. You know, I'd have to give it to the Gasols.
And then Lopez, yeah.
You know, right off the bat, if you're thinking about it, by far you're right. The Gasols are amazing. So, listen, it's time for some football. Let's drop some bait. And come back week 12 college football and week 11 in the NFL. Ray and Tay today.
Yes, we're back. And we're back to talk some pigskin, some football.
Ray,
big week in college.
I'm hyped.
Pros, there's about two or three.
Some really good games in NFL. Yeah.
In the NFL, but in college, ooh, it's on.
It's on like Donkey Kong, and starting off in the Big Ten, Ray, we've got the team that we've got to celebrate. Ohio State for what they did, and we'll have, you know what, we got to look at the top 25 too. We got to talk about that in the rankings. But let's just look at this game first, and then we can do that. Ohio State at number 8 against number 25 Minnesota. This is interesting, I think, for the fact that they're getting to play another ranked opponent, Ohio State. I think the win over Michigan State has got them focused and hyped. I think Barrett is on a roll. I think they're running the ball good with Elliott and you know, they're getting the ball to Smith on the edge, and their offensive line is looking kind of dominant. And I think if the SEC teams beat up on each other and, you know, Baylor or TCU winds up losing eventually, you know, there's no reason to think that Ohio State, if they can, you know, put up a good performance against Minnesota and beat the Wisconsin-Nebraska winner, They in the Big Ten title game, they've got a shot, Ray, to potentially join the party of the four in the playoff. I really believe that. But Minnesota's dangerous. You gotta watch out for Minnesota. But I'm gonna go with Ohio State. Although I do like Minnesota's running game. I do like their kid. Cobb? I like Cobb.
Cobb is tough.
I'll take Ohio State though against the Golden Gophers. And I'll say I'm going to go 30-21. I'll take Ohio State.
It would take a huge performance from David Cobb and a time of possession type of game to keep this crazy Ohio State offense that averages 46 points a game off the field. I don't think Minnesota does that. Quiet is kept. There's a kid from Texas named JT Barrett, who is having a phenomenal freshman year. I mean, this kid is unbelievable. 2,100 yards, 26 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. A kid that wasn't even supposed to play. And this guy is just, he's the real deal. Now, having said all of that, deep down, I know, you know, and everybody else knows, Ohio State's not one of the top 4 teams in the country. So, I hope the scenario that you painted doesn't come to fruition. Not that I'm hating on anybody.
Are you a Big Ten hater?
No, not at all. But I give credit where credit is due. and the SEC has to have at least one, if not two, teams in the Final Four, just because that conference is by far and away the best conference in college football. So
after you give your score, I want to ask you a question about that. But go ahead.
I do think Ohio State takes care of business. I think they probably pull away in the second half too much offense. So I think they end up putting up 38 to Minnesota's 26.
So I want to look at this top 25 and stuff, but I want to ask you, what's the dream scenario? What's the perfect fit, you think, for college football? Is it an 18 playoff or is it a 16 team playoff?
No, 16 is too much, because I can't say that if you're the 16th best team in the nation, you have no business playing or even having a chance to win a national championship.
Okay, so right now 16 would be Nebraska with Amir Abdullah,
yeah.
and you know, so that's like Nebraska, Georgia's 15, Arizona 14. But if we went to 8, right? With 8, you could have all the conference title winners, the 5, you know, conference winners, and then you could have like what you would almost say like 3 wild cards, the next best 3. And I think that way it's fair, right, for conference play, and everybody respects, you know, the conferences. And then I think it's also fair for, you could have 2 SEC teams, even 3, but at least the conferences will still get their respect. And right now, that would be Ohio State 8, Baylor 7, Arizona State 6, Bama 5, TCU 4, Florida State 3, Oregon 2, and Mississippi State 1. So you have your 2 SECs, you got the Big Ten, the Big 12 has 2, you know, you got the Pac-12 with 2, you know, so the Florida State for ACC is there. So, you know, everybody's kind of covered.
Me.
Yeah, and look at the matchups. You imagine Mississippi State going up against Ohio State, Baylor against Oregon, Arizona State at 6 going up against Florida State at 3, and then TCU Bama in a 4-5 game. How classic would this season be right now if we had an 18 playoff? Wow, Ray.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I love it.
You're right. That's the magic number. I think it's going to be hard with 4, because legitimately the way this season is playing out, we will have team 5 and 6 be deserving and be pissed off. And it's just the way it's going to play. It really is. It's unfortunate, but it is. Did you have any issue with Florida State being leapfrogged from Oregon, and Oregon being at 2, and Florida State still undefeated, defending champs, 9-0, being number 3? Because I didn't have any issue with that.
I have a little bit of an issue. If you're undefeated, okay, how could you be – you know what I mean? How could you fall?
Yeah.
What could you have done better than win all your games? And
they haven't been winning so impressively. It's been – every game's been kind of, you know, whatever.
True,
but then we get into
style points and racking up the scores. But, I don't have a problem with it this year, much less of a problem than I had in past years, because
It'll be played on the field,
right. And both of those teams, not only did they have to fill out their regular season, but they have to finally, 3-4 years ago, the Pac-12 came up with a Pac-12 championship. So they each have to play a conference championship game. So there's no ducking for either of those two teams. So whether it's Auburn, you know, or Alabama or one of those SEC teams, I mean, you might even have a 2-loss SEC team joining them. But Oregon and Florida State basically control their destiny. If they win out, they're in the Final Four. Period.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's 2, who's 3,
right.
Who cares?
And did you have any issue with TCU being 4 and Bama 5? Both of them 8-1.
Right. A little bit. Only because if Alabama paid TCU 10 times, Alabama probably wins 7 or 8. So I think Alabama's the better team. But you know what? TCU's having a great year. They're both 8-1.
Well, that's what I was saying. And their only loss, 3 points on the road at Baylor. And, you know, hey, whatever. So let's get back to previewing the game. We got number 19 Clemson, who I think has been slept on and forgotten, against number 22 Georgia Tech. And kudos to Georgia Tech, Ray, having a very impressive season. But I just would – I think that Clemson would be too much. Now, I definitely like I like Thomas. You know, I think for Clemson, he's been a strong quarterback, a good runner. You know, Georgia Tech's got something there. But I think Clemson has got not just a good offense, but I think their defense is going to be probably pretty stout in this game. I think this is actually not going to be super high scoring. I think it's going to be more low scoring than people think. And I'm going to take Clemson over Georgia Tech. I'll say 26-20. I'm going to go with Clemson.
So you know the game's in at Georgia Tech, right?
Yes, it is.
Ooh. So I'm tempted.
6-1 in ACC.
Versus 5-2 in the ACC.
Versus 5-2, yeah.
I might have to agree with you, though. I think Clemson goes on the road, and I think that Clemson D is the difference. You know, they both can score, but I think the Clemson D shuts Georgia Tech down, and I think Clemson ends up not running away with this, but they win a low-scoring game. I'd say 20-17.
Okay, you're even lower than me. Well, look, this is what we've all been waiting for. 3:30 Eastern, number one, Mississippi State, going to Tuscaloosa at number 5, Alabama, Ray. Blake Sims, you know, had a bad game last week against LSU. Can he bounce back besides that final drive in overtime or, you know, to put it to overtime or whatever? He showed up at the end. But this is the question. I threw this out there on Twitter, and I think what we have is an opportunity for, you know, these schools, their organizations, for an organization like Mississippi State who has 2, 3, 4-star players to go up against the Bama with all the 5-star studs. And I think you've got an opportunity for this kid, Dak Prescott, on this field, on this game, to put his stake in the ground and not only lead his team to potentially a national championship, but to claim and put his hands all over that Heisman Trophy. And everyone is watching, and I'm going to tell you, this kid's going to do it. I'm going with the Bulldogs, baby.
No.
Mississippi State.
Are you serious?
Listen, I'm a Bama Nick Saban guy. You know, Ray and I grew up in Michigan and Bama fans. We still are. But I believe in Dak Prescott. He's a mixture of Manziel and Tim Tebow mixed with T. Martin and whoever else you want to throw in there, our boy back in the days from Nebraska. This kid is special. Dak Prescott is going to claim. You're going to see Robinson do his thing running, and I think it's going to come down to just building confidence through the game. First, I think they'll spread him out 5 wide and attack Alabama. Then they'll get a first down. They'll get a drive. They'll get a touchdown. They got to throw that first punch, and I think Mullins is a good coach, good coordinator, and I think Mississippi State is going to win 30-27 in more of a high-scoring game than we would expect in the SEC, and them Bulldogs are going to come home undefeated again.
So if all of that happens,
woo!
Dak Prescott wins the
high school. He's winning it. He's winning it on Saturday, baby.
But I don't think he's going to do that in Tuscaloosa because you give Nick Saban – a week, and I'm sure Nick Saban's looked ahead, even though he won't say it, he's looked ahead to this team and this game. And you give Nick Saban time to scheme.
Yeldon's
going to
fumble.
But essentially one guy. I mean, Dak Prescott himself has 3,000 yards from scrimmage. Not yards from scrimmage, but, you know, passing,
yeah, passing
and running himself.
Yeah.
He's too much of their offense. So I think Alabama with Blake Sims and the two-headed monster and T.J. Yeldon and Henry, I think they're going to be able to, both running at 5 yards a clip, they're both going to be able to matriculate the ball up and down the field. And even though Alabama's offense has been a little inconsistent, what hasn't been inconsistent is Alabama's defense. And
Blake Sims
is
getting picked off.
Oh, no.
You
so
feel
I
it
like
in your heart. You're afraid to predict it because I know you feel it in your genes.
No. And the funny thing is, of all of those players, we haven't even talked about the best player
Cooper.
On the field. And
Cooper
his
is
name
best.
Is Cooper, right? So he's going to have a big game. I think they're going
to
consistently run the ball, and I don't think Mississippi State can stop them. And I look for a big game from Amari Cooper. So ultimately, it's a close game. I think that LSU shook up Alabama a little bit. They had to go to overtime to win last week. But I think at home in Tuscaloosa at Bryant Denny Stadium, Alabama Crimson Tide put a spanking on Mississippi State.
Oh.
I think they end up winning 31-17.
Ouch. No respect. 31-17. Now,
I
if you say this,
wait,
I just want to ask you.
Here.
Okay, but 31-17, you say this, then how far did they drop in the rankings, Mississippi State? Down to like 4 or 5?
I don't think they dropped that far, maybe to 3. You know,
okay.
Depending on how everything happens. It's still a beautiful season to go 9-1 and have your only loss be on the road in Tuscaloosa.
At Bama, yeah. No,
November, that's still very impressive.
Okay, 31-17. All right, let's finish these last two games. We got Big Ten matchup in Big Ten Eastern. I think it's the East or the West. I don't know. They switched the divisions, but I think it's the East. So it's number 16, Nebraska, at number 20, Wisconsin. I'll just say this. This is the battle of the two running backs that potentially could be first-round picks in a time when it doesn't happen. Amir Abdullah against Melvin Gordon. And the one thing I will say, I love Wisconsin's offensive line. I think they both have, you know, better than average defenses. But Wisconsin's had issues at quarterback all season. And I think Nebraska, I think their quarterback is a little bit more together. And I think
like Armstrong?
I think Armstrong, to me, he's not having a great season, but I will say this, he's doing a little bit more than what's going on with your boy McElroy, if you know that's who they're going to stick with for the whole game. I think obviously Wisconsin's been switching. You know, Gordon, he's been pretty much amazing. I think the winner of this game, I think out of the running backs, will get invited to New York because I think Amir Abdullah has just been insane. I mean, the guy's got 1,250 yards rushing. 17 touchdowns. So now that's, but Gordon is still a little bit ahead of him. So, I mean, even in a lost
19
quarter,
touchdowns.
He'll go to New York.
He's got
1,900
yards, 15,
1,500 yards. So, I mean, but Abdullah's having an amazing season. But what I do think this could get him invited to New York. You know what I mean? And I just think he's going to have a big game. I like him pass catching out of the backfield.
All right, what's
Nebraska,
your score? What's your score?
I'm going to go 27-23.
So I think Wisconsin's D is ultimately going to be the difference, and I think they're going to possess the ball with Gordon, and they're going to limit Amir Abdullah to a decent amount, 100 yards, 90, 100 yards. I think ultimately Wisconsin wins a tight game, 20-17. Hold on. I think we have a caller here. Let's see if the caller wants to talk college, pro football, NBA. Hello, caller, you're on the air with Ray and Teddy.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen?
What's the deal? Who's this?
This is Naj, man. I'm in Atlanta.
Hey, Naj.
What's up, Naj?
What's on your mind?
Not much, man. Hey, I heard the talk earlier about the playoff and how it's probably going to increase to 8. I think you're going way too small, man. That thing's
like
going to be a 32. It's going to be a 32-team playoff by the time they get done counting the money and figuring out how much sponsorships they can get and how much they can make off of this. I mean, the 4 was the slow play to get it in. So they're just going to keep expanding.
So, you know
how it goes.
So what do you have? So now let me ask you. So what do you mean? That you think the college season is going to extend into January, or they're going to start the bowls in December? How do you do that logistically? Because what's that, 4 more weeks?
They don't care. That's the least of their worries. They will play that thing up until February if need be, if the money says so. So they don't care about that. That's like the last thing on their mind. Remember years ago the argument used to be, well, kids have school so they can't have a tournament at the end of the year. Yeah, funny how that disappeared all of a sudden. So don't worry about that, man.
So let me ask you this. Who's your team? And like this year, would you prefer to see this, let's say this first season, are you happy with the four, or would you like to see the eight like we were talking about earlier, which could be amazing for this season if we had the eight?
Well, let me give y'all my diabolical plan, okay? First of all, I'm hoping that the SEC just has anarchy and only gets one team in, or barely gets one team in. Like, the people who are supposed to win lose, and people who are supposed to win lose win. So I hope,
right,
I hope that messes everything up. So that way, then they'll want to expand to eight. And once they start expanding to eight, we can get to my real discussion, which would be payment for the players who are being abused right now and should definitely be compensated for what they put out on the field.
Definitely. That's
so
without a question.
That's interesting. And you're calling from SEC country, too, so that's funny that you say that.
Right. And
you've
got the College Football Hall of Fame down there. Have you gone by and checked that out? I heard that's a pretty nice visit.
From what I've heard, but no, I haven't been yet. But look,
okay,
I'm a college football fan, but I'm also a fan of human rights. So
definitely.
When
you
I see people
that.
Being abused, I kind of got to side with humans before I go to my football fandom.
Well, and you make a great point that these kids, and this has been for years, but you know, it's gotten worse because the TV money's gotten bigger, and now you're doing jersey sales. And what I don't understand is how you have – it's one thing, the old trade-off was, oh, we give you a scholarship and you play so you're a student-athlete. But now they merchandise the heck out of these kids. They sell their likeness. They sell their jerseys. You're telling me that my name is on the back of a jersey, or at least my number. Some of these colleges don't put your name on the back of the jersey. You're selling my name, and I can't get money from that? That's crazy.
Yeah,
look, man, the University of Cincinnati is still making money off pictures and autographs and, you know, just memorabilia from when Oscar Robertson played there. So it never stopped. This is what they do. It never stops. It has to be called out. But the most deplorable action, I think, is the alums of Alabama who bought Nick Saban a house. So, I mean, like, once you get the levels of that kind of ineptitude and just, I guess you could say, disrespect of everybody else's intelligence, you realize what we're dealing with.
So, wait, but I still want to get to this. Who's your favorite team? Who you ride with?
Hey, look, man, I'm in Georgia, so I ride with Georgia. Of course, Mark Richt should be fired, and of course they're going to underachieve. I know this. I know this before the season kicked off.
He teases you every season, right?
Yes, this is what he does.
Well, but does Gurley come back, and do they have a big? Does he have a big game, and do they win this week?
I think he is coming back, and I think we will get the win. Because I don't think Auburn has much to play for anymore, and I think that's going to mess them up a bit. So we're going to win.
Nick Marshall doesn't bounce back. Nick Marshall won't bounce back. And that's what we were going to talk about. I actually think Georgia does beat Auburn this week. I was going to say 30-27. I think Georgia. Do you trust the quarterback? You trust Mason Hudson? I mean, he's been pretty good this year.
Oh, I thought his name was Game Manager. I didn't know he had a real name.
I'm
hoping he can do the best Trent Dilfer impersonation that is possible and pull this out, man. I'm rooting for the dude. He's a fifth year senior, not really a talented guy, but loves football. So you got to root for that dude.
Not everybody's Matt Stafford now. Come on, cut him a break.
And you know what? I give a lot of credit to Chubb. He's come in and played like he deserves a starting job. So. Both of those
guys. Yeah,
Chubbs
is a baller. But it's still the irony of us playing one Nick Marshall, the threat at quarterback, while he was at Georgia, Mark Richt had him playing DB.
Right, exactly. There you go.
Listen, quick, you're Atlanta. Are you a pro fan, too? What's with those Falcons? Are they ever going to turn it around, or does that need to be blown up?
They're going to have to change that whole regime. Dimitrov's drafts just haven't panned out, so the O-lines and D-lines are terrible, and they're just trying to pull out wins with skill players. Like right now, can you name one player on the Falcons defense?
No, your guy. See? The guy with the reality show, Kearney. That's a Kearney or whatever, yeah.
That's not Kearney. Kearney's been gone. See, now I can't think of the guy's name. I forgot. But it's not Kearney. That's the old school.
Yeah. No, you're right. And they, you know, they got rid of Grimes before in the secondary. They, you know, good move to get Julio Jones, but you're right. You can't, you know, you lost Gonzalez. You can't just rely on the signing of Steven Jackson and your receivers on the outside and Matt Ryan. And guess what? If you don't protect Matt Ryan, and they've had some bad luck with injuries in the offensive line, but if you don't protect him, he can't move. And so he's not like one of these athletic quarterbacks, not even like a Russell Wilson or Andrew Luck. And more so than Brady and Manning, Matt Ryan will throw it up for grabs and get you 2 to 3 interceptions a game if he's pressured. And that's why I think the Panthers are going to beat the Falcons this week, because I don't think the Falcons
when I say this, I get extreme hate from anybody in Georgia or Falcon fans, but the reality is Matt Ryan is similar to Andy Dalton. They're both guys who play better in a dome. Bad weather or wind conditions do not help them because they don't have the strongest arms. And like you said, Matt's been playing behind a bad offensive line, but he's not a great franchise quarterback. He's a good quarterback, and if you give him all the tools and perfect conditions, he can ball out. But he's just not that great.
Well, he's won you 13 games before. My thing is, you might be right, but here's my thing. You get bad habits. When you have to win games on offense and your D hasn't been good for 5 years and you have some skill position players, but somehow there's some cohesiveness missing. And then I don't know, since Tony Gonzalez left and then Julio got hurt and they just couldn't keep it together. Matt Ryan, it seems like he regressed a little bit. And I think some of it is organizational because of that pressure on him and because he's asked to do so much. So if he starts the season with a decent defense, a solid offensive line, he can still win you 10, 12 games. There have been lesser quarterbacks to win Super Bowls.
Those lesser quarterbacks didn't have what he has. That's the point I'm trying to make. He's a perfect conditions guy. Those 13-win seasons, what did he have? Hall of Famer at tight end, Roddy White, who possibly will be a fringe, fringe
Hall of Famer,
for the
Hall.
And, you know, the young Julio Jones, like, he had great pieces around him, and that's when he was effective. Now, once it becomes a case to where you lose a few great pieces and the line is not as good, he's not good enough himself to kind of propel you forward. Like, take Aaron Rodgers. They've reshuffled that whole offense in Green Bay. They had to bring in new guys. They got rookies on the O-line.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing all
kinds
of things. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. You see what
I mean?
Like, he's not that guy.
Man. Right, Aaron Rodgers, Hall of Famer, I mean, projects to be a Hall of Famer, so it's a little unfair for Matt Ryan. But I hear what you're saying. So what are you saying, that you, as a Falcon fan, you're not rolling with him, or you're trying
to
build around? You still think you can build around?
He's not going anywhere, so I kind of have to accept it, but I also know how limited he is. You know what I mean? So I'm looking at it from that standpoint. If we improve the team to the point to where he can prosper, okay, let's go, Matty Ice. But if we don't get those pieces around him, then he's just going to be an average dude with an $80 million cap number.
Right. And you know what it is? It is, number one, like you do with all the, you know, big-time quarterbacks, you got to go to him. He'll adjust the contract a little bit. And you have to rebuild the secondary, the defensive line, and the offensive line. And then you'll have a shot in maybe 3 or 4 years. The good thing is, you know, your division is always rotating. Even this year, you're still alive in the playoffs. Oh, and the guy is Croy Bierman. That's who I was thinking about. Croy Bierman. Yeah, Croy. Reminds me of Patrick Kearney, but it's Croy Bierman. But it's so funny, man, because I love Steven Jackson when he was with the Rams, but I thought, you know, it was just, you got him too late. It's almost like the Knicks, right? The Knicks always sign these great old veterans, you know, Kiki Vandeweghe and all these old guys, too late. You know, so the Atlanta Falcons, Steven Jackson is too late. So I'm hoping they start to give the ball to our boy Jacquez and Dante Freeman.
Steven Jackson is that 99 Lexus you see at that parking lot that you drive by, and you always think, like, man, I wonder if that Lexus is any good. Man, I might go over there. And as soon as you buy that Lexus, you realize why it was over there, because you're going to have problems maintaining it, and it's just not going to be what you thought it was from the outside, because it had its day.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is running backs are easier to get nowadays than they used to be because there's a lot of good ones coming out of college. So you can hopefully address that. Lines, you know, it's funny because Dallas, the resurrection of the Cowboys, the Broncos, you've got to build a team from the offense and the defensive line. And I think Atlanta got away from that for a few years, and they're definitely paying the price now.
Well, Russell McCall should come back next season, though. What's the young kid, Matthews, should come back next season.
Right, the newest of the Matthews family. I think he's going to be solid. Well, I don't have a problem with him. He'll probably be our left tackle for the next 10 years or so. But the problem was we missed on so many O-linemen because we put ourselves in desperate situations to where he can say he was drafting for talent all he wants, but point blank period, he started drafting for need because he had to fill the position. And you push those rookies out there, and some of them just aren't what you thought they were on tape.
Yeah. And then also, I thought it was weird that you let go of Abraham and you bring in OC and, you know, overpay him when Abraham was better, more productive. And you know, look, he had, what, a year or two with the Cardinals where he played pretty good. But, some weird moves. Cause you have
they gave
no
all the money to the offense. They didn't have much left for the defense, so they tried to cut corners and do it the best they could.
Right.
Like you said, the difference between Abraham and OC at this point in their career – I mean, there's no way you shouldn't pay that. It was stupid.
Yeah, it was stupid. Oh, man. Listen, hey, great call. Thanks for calling, Nigel. We'll definitely talk to you again soon, man.
All right, I'll hang up and listen, man. Good show, y'all.
Definitely.
All right, thanks a lot.
Man. Appreciate it.
Have a great weekend.
You too,
listen,
man.
He brings up a great point, Ray. You know, when you think, if we're honest, right, we all know, whether it's sponsored by ESPN or Fox or both of them, why wouldn't they go from 4, then wait 2 years, then go to 8, and then tease you with 16? And then, you know, I think they might stop at 16, but I understand what he's saying and his belief of them going to 32 because they talk about the politics of tradition and why it's been holding it back. But at the end of the day, they're going to get these guys in a room and they're going to see how much money they make this season and the receipts alone for this college playoff. I mean, look, every Tuesday, ESPN's got a show releasing
the
rankings.
It's not basketball. I mean, if it was strictly money, yes, but kids get injured. And, you know, just like in the NFL, we were screaming. We were up in arms when they talked about moving the schedule from 16 to 18 games, which may have been just been a bluff by Roger Goodell to get other concessions. But, you know, to have it go beyond 8 games, think about it. It either means that you're starting in December, which they might have to do because I don't know that they want to run up against the NFL playoffs, right? Wild card weekend.
Right. But that Christmas weekend, you know, you could start to have the, you know, or even, look, even if they played the first round, you know, New Year's Day, and then, you know, go for the whole month of January, 4 weeks of January, it could be
but
done.
But when do those play those games? Because the NFL is going Saturday, Sunday for the playoffs, right? So they don't want to run up against the NFL.
It could become the Friday Night Lights.
You might be right. Swear. That might be how they do it. Because all of high school is over
how
by
about
then,
the
right?
Ratings.
Friday Night Lights.
How about the ratings on Fox and potentially NBC for college football on Friday nights for a playoff in the dead of winter for the majority of the country where it's so cold and people are with families and people who are fans of their home. I mean, Ray, they're going to win in the ratings. Listen, he might be right with eventually 32. I think it maxes at 16, but I think this 4 will last for 3 years the most, and then we're going to 8. And then we'll see from there. But I do think it is going to increase, whether it's fast or slow. But we got to talk NFL. That was a great call. Right off the bat, Ray, when you look at this week, we got some good matchups. One game that might be underrated, but we got to talk about it. The Houston Texans with Ryan Mallett at the Cleveland Browns. The division leading for the first time in 19 years, Cleveland Browns. And I'm going to tell you, I think the Browns go ahead and win a tough game against Houston. Foster's a banged up. Not sure if he's playing. Alfred Blue might get the start. They might split time. We'll see. You know, I don't know if it's hamstring or a groin. But I think what it comes down to it is that secondary, Gibson's leading the league in interceptions. They get turnovers. You got Buster Screen. You got our boy Hayden, who I think is a top 3-4 corner. And I think the Browns wind up winning a tough battle. I'll say 20-17 over the Texans. Hoyer is clutch.
You know what? Even though I don't know much about Ryan Mallett's ability to play because I haven't seen him, I just heard about him from Arkansas Dave, you know, 5 years ago. So
even Hoyer said he has the strongest arm he's ever seen when they were all on the Patriots for one season.
I know that
there.
Brian Hoyer is pretty good. He's won a lot of close games, and he's won a lot of close games without Josh Gordon. So that means he is using that three-headed monster running attack and throwing to nobody in particular and moving the ball. And not even my man, the tight end, Jordan Cameron.
Yeah.
So I love Cleveland, but you know what? They scare me in the sense that I'm not sure they're ready to play from ahead and be hunted. They're pretty good as the hunter, but I'm not sure if they can play from ahead. So I think that if Arian Foster's healthy enough to give him 80 to 100 yards, and this kid Blue gives him another 40 or 50 yards, they go Blue! Boy, you get your fans out there. I think the Texans keep the game close, and they win a tight one in Cleveland, 23-20.
23-20. Nah, I'm not thinking about Michigan. I'm thinking about old school. I love you, Blue.
Oh, go Blue. Oh, from old school. Yeah.
Yeah, old school. My boy, Blue. Oh, that was great. So then we got the defending champs, the Seahawks, traveling to Kansas City. This is a very interesting game because one thing the Chiefs do, they play defense and they run the ball. And if Alex Smith can, you know, all year they haven't thrown a touchdown to any of their receivers, not even my boy Dwayne Bowe, not Donnie Avery on the luck, nobody, Nathan. But Travis Kelce scores on the regular, and I think the Chiefs are going to keep this close. This could be an upset special, but the Seahawks have gotten back to what they do, and that's Wilson running, throwing where he needs to, and beast mode is back. So I think the Seahawks win a good dogfight, close, sneaky game, 26-20 over the Chiefs. But watch Kansas City.
So it turns out that the Chiefs, who I had drafted originally, is actually playing better than the Seahawks team.
Uh-huh.
And the Chiefs are such an enigma. And the typical Chief player is Dwayne Bowe. This guy drives me crazy. He's so talented coming out of LSU. He could be a top five receiver. He could be Dez Bryant if he wanted to be. But he's so up and down. And Alex Smith, we know, is a solid, solid ball player. And really, their playmaker is Jamaal Charles. I do think, though, that Seattle stops Jamaal Charles. Like you said, they're running the ball more with Marshawn Lynch. I think Russell Wilson is running the ball too much. And I get when you can make a first down or two, but when you see Russell Wilson carrying the ball 10, 12, 14 times, he's going to get hit one of these times. So I think he's going to have to tone down as they make their playoff run. But I think that this Seattle team that was on the ropes a week ago wins the game, goes 7-3, and starts their playoff run here. I think they win a pretty easy game. I think they put up 27 and hold Kansas City at 17.
Well, now we have the who dat versus the who dat. You got the 5-3-1 Bengals going to the 4-5 Saints. What a mess. Both these teams, predicted to win their divisions. They both are alive still for their division titles, but neither one of them act like they want to win a game. But I got to tell you, this is where we sort of, I think, say good day, good afternoon, and good night to the Bengals and Andy Dalton. I think A.J. Green will do well at fantasy. No Giovanni. I think Jeremy Hill plays well. But I think at home, after losing to the Niners, I think between Ingram, Brandon Cooks, Jimmy Graham getting healthier, Drew Brees will carry this team to not just win this division, but to do what they got to do and continue to win at home. I say the Saints win this game 30-20. They're going to rip up that
Bengals
secondary.
I think the Bengals are in trouble. The Bengals, I had them winning their division, running away with the AFC North. And they started out well. The injuries, they seem to never recover. They seem to never recover psychologically, which is even worse than physically, you know, because A.J. Green will come back. and Giovanni
and
Bernard.
Sanu has played so amazing.
Sanu's been great, and Jeremy Hill is a fine, and Bernard. But I still think that the Saints are starting to put it together, and I think the Saints are a different team at home. And like you, I think they win pretty big. So I have the Saints putting up 31 and the Bengals 23.
Yeah, it's oh man, it's gonna be rough. So next up, we got a nice little matchup here. You know, you see the Chargers are gonna handle the Raiders, something awful, but we're going to Green Bay because we got them Eagles with Mark Sanchez or Sanchez, as some like to call him, going up against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. This game is the game of just offensive talent. McCoy, Sproles, Lacy, you know, I mean,
Macklin,
the receivers, Cobb and Nelson, quiet as kept, they are the best two receivers in the game statistically right now. They are having monster seasons. You know, he's bringing up Andrew Crowell's and Davante Adams, another one of those 10 rookie wide receivers that are in here dominating. And I think, honestly, your boy Aaron Rodgers is on the verge of making Ray look like the man of picks because he is an MVP candidate, and Aaron Rodgers is going to outscore, outshine, and outplay Philadelphia. I don't think the Eagles defensively will be able to really stop or slow down what the Packers and Rodgers, you know, can do on the field. Although I don't think the Packers' defense, they're going to dominate like the way they did against the Bears and what they did against the Saints. So I actually think we're going to have a shootout. And for fantasy fans, load up every player you can. You know, put in Celek and Nick Ertz and Zach Ertz. They're both going to score. You know, both running backs for them are going to score. And I say the Packers win an exciting, tough game. I'll go 35-30. The Packers win over the Eagles.
See, I think the jury's still out on Mark Sanchez in his return. You know, he cut his hair. They told him to get more serious, and maybe
believe
he got more serious.
It's all about
this
Chip.
This is his last chance. Look, Chip can basically take you or I. We got to work on our arm strength a little bit and make us decent NFL quarterbacks. But I think that with a week to prepare, I think the Packers are going to be ready. So I think the Packers, like you said, I think Eddie Lacy has a big game. Hopefully he can stay healthy. And I think that ultimately the Packers end up winning 31-23, I'll say. Oh, same score as the previous game, what we just predicted. So the Eagles, I think Mark Sanchez ultimately makes a couple mistakes and costs the Eagles the game. I think they could win the game, but I think that Mark Sanchez has to outplay Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think he does that.
That's fair. Yeah, and I feel the same way. I think McCoy is going to have one of a big game, though. I think you could still run on Green Bay. So Shady will give you a touchdown and 115, 20 yards. So look for that. Now, this is a great game. Detroit Lions, folks, at the Arizona Cardinals. These are two of the sort of unexpected dominating teams in NFC, 7-2 against 8-1. Drew Stanton's not there. Ellington has still got the toe, but he's, you know, coming in and running, but they haven't been running the ball well the last couple of weeks. The Lions, Bush is banged up, but Theo Reddick and Joyke Bell are still kind of, you know, doing things. This one is so hard. All week I've been going back and forth, but for some reason I just think the Lions are, I don't want to say they're playing with destiny, but there's something I like about this team. I really was impressed with that Dolphins win. And I think they're going to go to the desert and somehow Stafford remembers that he's a 5,000-yard passer. And I think Tate and Johnson and maybe Ebron or one of these tight ends, I think they spread out Arizona like the Broncos did. And Arizona's bold. They like to play a lot of man-to-man. I think Fitzgerald will do well with him and Stanton. And maybe Michael Floyd comes back into it. A little bit more offense than people think in this game. But I think it comes down to Tate and Johnson. Like last week, they both get over 100 yards. Stafford throws for like 360. And I think the Lions win 27-24 in a very exciting game, like they all have been lately in out here in the desert. Lions get the upset.
Down on the Cardinals, saying they're not as good as the record, and they're 8-1 right now. If they win this game 9-1, that probably puts them in the driver's seat for the number one position in the NFC, let alone winning the NFC West. I just, for some reason, like you said, the Lions are a tough team to figure out. You know, they could easily be 5-4.
And that defensive line. Everybody talks about JJ Watt. What about Ndamukong Suh, baby?
Yeah, and if Megatron, can stay healthy, and Golden Tate emerges as a very good number two receiver, I think losing Carson Palmer hurts the Cardinals. I think the only way the Cardinals win is if Andre Ellington has an enormous game and takes a lot of pressure off Stanton. So I think the Lions win in a low-scoring game. I think they win something like 23-20. Detroit
and it
wins.
Is very hard to run on the Lions. Yeah, it's hard to run on the Lions' defensive line. They don't give up too much run. Well, that's going to be interesting. So we'll wrap it up with Sunday Night Football, Ray. This right here is a classic of the present and the future against the present and the past. Now, the Patriots are going to the Colts. Right now, Andrew Luck is probably in the forefront, even ahead of Rodgers, in the MVP race, especially at quarterback. He's the number one fantasy quarterback. He's, 3,000 yards plus for the season. You got to be impressed with this guy to the highest degree. I think Reggie Wayne's going to be a little bit more healthy. I think Ahmad Bradshaw is going to be tough. I think T.Y. Hilton is going to be ready, even though you've got Revis and Browner and the great secondary. But what I think the Colts do, like they did to Manning on that Sunday Night Football last year, and what they can do to, a lot of teams, they jam the receivers. And all season long, Gronkowski's been getting free looks, running free into the secondary. It's not going to happen against the Colts. They're going to rough him up. They're going to bang him. They're going to put some press coverage. And I think basically we're going to see two quarterbacks kind of flex their muscles. But I think the Colts will have a little bit more time of possession because the Patriots are not running the ball so great right now. They miss Ridley and Jonas Gray, and these guys are not really the answer. And Shane Vereen has not really been doing it. And I think the Colts beat the Patriots, I'll say 30-27. Colts, Vinatieri, it's good. Payback.
That's funny. Vinatieri beats his old team. I agree with the outcome. I think the Colts win a close game. I think the Patriots have been on a roll. But this game, there's no rivalry when Peyton's not there, right? The rivalry was when Peyton was there. Andrew Luck is the next Peyton Manning. He's the real deal. And I think getting Reggie Wayne back puts all of his offense in place, right? They've got the running back by committee deal with Richardson and Bradshaw. And then they've got Hilton and Wayne, and then they've got, the Allen coming back off the injury with his college teammate, Colby Fleener. So I think offensively, Indianapolis is
Wayne
set.
Baby.
So defensively, I think they're able to give the Patriots the business on the outside. I think Brendan LaFell is playing above his pay grade. And as long as Gronkowski doesn't beat you down the middle of the field, I think the Colts are going to win this game. I think the Colts are going to win. And you know what? I think the Patriots are due for a little bit of a letdown. So I think the Colts win 35-27.
Wow, 35-27. And you know what's so interesting about that is that you can see this is the type of game where these guys could play to even overtime. You know what I mean? You just I think both teams have better defenses than people I think would think or anticipate, but
right. The
one thing that you said that I think is so true, I mean, it's going to come down more so, I think, to the running game. And I just think right now, Bradshaw has been on both teams. He's been the best runner. I mean, if we're being honest, he's really stepped up and come back and is having a great season you know, for somebody that the Giants kind of were ready to, you know, put to pasture.
Yeah. Well, it was time probably for both sides to move on in that relationship. But yeah. But no, it was a great show. We had a great caller. We had a lot to talk about. We have a lot to talk about on Monday. We have a guest, ex St. John's and NBA player, real friendly, knowledgeable guy, then Don Hamilton. He can talk a little college, a lot of pros, and talk about playing in the NBA, coaching. So we look forward to that. We look forward to having you back with us on Monday.
Yeah, no, it should be fun. Like always, shoot us your emails at rayandtatetoday@gmail.com. Let us know if you agree with our picks. You know, Ray's sticking with the Tide, and you got Tay going out on a limb and staking the claim with Dak Prescott for the upset.
Roll Tide!
You know, they're 8.5-point underdogs on the road, Mississippi State. That's a lot. I think that's a lot for the number one team.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say it should be 4 or 5, but I still got a Roll Tide. Roll Tide!
You got a Roll Tide. Yeah, so listen, hey, great weekend, and like always, thanks for listening, and thanks for talking sports with friends.
Have a great Peace. Sports weekend.
Day and day to day. Day out. Day in. Day out. How can we really see when our eyes are blinded to what Let's we go really next. Need? They control our minds. Got a win tonight over the Jazz, really baby. When our eyes are blinded to what we really need.
Full of treacherous nuts, real criminals at the top. more dirt than those with gas to bust. So be careful of who you trust. What life is full of treacherousness. Real criminals at the top. Be more dirt than those with gas to bust. So be careful of who you trust. What life is full of treacherousness. Real criminals at the top. Be more dirt than those with gas to bust. So be careful of who you trust. What life is full of treacherousness. Real criminals at the top. Be more dirt than those with gas to bust. So be careful of who you trust. What life is full of treacherousness. Real criminals at the top. Be more dirt than those with gas to bust.